traveling with.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week I bring you exciting new guests to talk about various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. Last night we were supposed to have Yvonne Smith, but she did have to cancel, so I filled in and talked about my new book, UFOs Over New York. I hope you all enjoyed that very much, but tonight we're talking about UFOs again, actually, which, if you've listened to this show for any length of time, you know it's definitely hands down my favorite subject. There is a lot to talk about in this exploding and volatile field, which I think is going to affect everyone intimately if it's not already. And tonight, our guest is Victor Vigiani, and we're going to be talking about exopolitics, or I guess the definition of that, Victor can elucidate us later, would be human and extraterrestrial relations. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Now, our guest actually wears many hats. He's a retired school principal. He has a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology and psychology. Now, that's got to come in hand. Definitely useful during UFO and paranormal investigations. And he also has a master's in educational administration and curriculum development. And he does a lot of other stuff, too. He's an accomplished musician, and he's a radio journalist. But most importantly here, he is currently the director of media relations for Exopolitics in Toronto, Canada. Now, this is a very, very hot topic, and it's getting into the news, the mainstream news, all the time. So I'm very excited about speaking with our guest tonight. He has published many works on exopolitics and global warming, on the Disclosure Project, on Area 51 and alien abductions, and other topics. He's done a lot of research in the American Southwest in particular, which I hope we can talk about some tonight, including such areas as Area 51, Groom Lake, Nevada, Corona, New Mexico, Roswell, New Mexico, Socorro, New Mexico. These are all places that have had really extensive activity, I mean, all the way down to UFO crashes and more. A very large array in New Mexico, the radar array, the goings-on at White Sands in Los Alamos, and the Dulce, New Mexico UFO story. So we have definitely got a lot to talk about tonight, and we're very lucky to have our guest here with us. Remember, this is a call-in show, so if any of you out there have any questions, please call us. We'd love to hear from you. If you just want to share a story or ask a question, here's the toll-free number. So grab your pen. It's 888-228-4494. I'll give it out again later in the show, but once more, it's 888-228-4494. But let's just get right to our guest number because we have a lot to talk about. Victor, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Oh, Preston, it's just an absolute pleasure to be with you this evening. I've been looking forward to it all week and preparing my notes and talking to people up here in Canada about the show, so I'm hoping that we've got lots of Canadian listeners and along with any international people that are joining us over the internet.
Right, yeah, there is an international number if people want to use that too, and that's on the website, you can find it. US exopolitics, what exactly is the definition of exopolitics?
Well, there's a lot of different perspectives on it. It's definitely a new and emerging political science, Preston, that has emerged from the ashes of typical traditional ufology. The traditional ufology has always done a lot of work and excellent work in cataloging UFOs, counting the kinds of sightings, the kinds of craft that are involved, and how many sightings there are per year. So traditional ufology has done a lot of that over the last 30 to 40 years in sort of cataloging information and providing a data bank for us. However, exopolitics is essentially a new version of the universe and a new understanding of what the UFO phenomenon really is and what it represents to us as it tries to come to grips with what the UFO phenomenon really means in terms of its representation and manifestation of intelligent life beyond Earth's geosynchronous orbit around the, around the sun. So I guess really what it comes down to is that exopolitics really says that, first of all, we are part of a populated cosmos, and that for some unknown reason, our neighbors in that populated cosmos are beginning to reach out and visit us in subtle ways, and sometimes not so subtle ways, in terms of UFOs and different kinds of manifestations, crop circles, and so forth. So it's definitely a new political science. It's emerging on the scientific field as well as the academic field as a very interesting component of how we understand the human civilization and our connection to advanced extraterrestrial civilizations in the universe.
Wow. Yeah, you know,
it's
amazing.
Mouthful, isn't it? Yeah, it is.
We
go the next step, I guess, is what I'm saying, into investigating what it's all about.
Well, it's about time because, you know, I don't know if people realize just how pervasive the whole UFO phenomenon is. In college, I wrote a paper in a political science, and the name of the paper was UFO Politics, and basically the whole point of the paper was to show that we are spending millions and millions of dollars, you know, studying this phenomena. You know, everyone from the FBI, the NSA, the Air Force, they've all done studies and stuff. Mm-hmm. But so you've been doing this for more than 30 years. Now, how did you get involved?
Oh, my gosh, that's a bit of a story all in itself. I read a book by Jacques Vallée back when I was, I guess, in my mid to late 20s, and Jacques Vallée was one of the first contributors in a really esoteric way to the whole idea of what UFOs are all about. And I began to really, after I read the book, actually I read the book three or four times. I generally don't read too much nonfiction, but as soon as I get a hold of my you know, some of these really great works on UFOs or just sort of the paranormal, I tend to really kind of go after them and read them and try to soak out every little bit of meaning from them, because it appears that some of these authors, and Jacques Vallée particularly as an individual, has really gone into a lot of great detail in how the UFO phenomenon manifests itself in a very, I guess, a very subtle way. You know, in a philosophical sense, Jacques Vallée made the point that we really don't know what these things are or where they're from or what their agenda is or why they're here. And that just intrigued me. So I continued to do much more reading, and then I got involved with different UFO organizations here in Toronto and beyond. And as a result, I got to find out that there was much, much more to the UFO phenomenon than just, you know, counting, you know, lights in the sky or different things like that. I got to find out that there was a highly political agenda or highly political implications as to what these UFOs really are. And those political implications, we can get into them, because I think your listeners would really appreciate knowing what those implications are. And I know that over the years, I have spent many, many hours over the radio, and also I'm aware of the fact that many of the intelligence agencies, both in Canada and the United States, are monitoring programs like this to find out what is going on in this field. So I would not be at all surprised, and I don't want to introduce too much intrigue into the show, if this program was not being monitored by some intelligence agencies both here in Canada and the United States. I think we can get into that in a little bit more detail in a while, because something has just come up on the Internet that really kind of proves what I'm saying. So, the short answer to your question, how did I get involved and why, is because this is such an integral part of who we are as a human species and what it really means to us to be part of a cosmos that's literally teeming with intelligent, advanced life that has a lot to offer who we are as a human species.
Right. Well, now, are we assuming now that UFOs, or at least some UFOs, are extraterrestrials, or do you leave that question open?
Well, I'm of the opinion that my personal opinion is that UFOs are in fact of extraterrestrial origin. That's my that some UFOs are of extraterrestrial origin. Now, over the last, if you'd asked me that question in 1952 or 53, I would have said, yes, they are in fact of extraterrestrial origin, because back then, any of the military or intelligence agencies, black budget agencies back then in the 50s, had absolutely no way of reproducing anything that could be considered close to what the extraterrestrial vehicles could do. They just did not, the Army, the Air Force, the Navy did not have any capacity to reproduce these vehicles. Over the years, and after many of the crashes that have occurred, some of these technologies have been back-engineered. And some of the things, underscore the word some, that we see in the skies right now, both over the United States and Canada and Belgium and France and throughout Europe and in Mexico, we believe are back-engineered vehicles that have somehow achieved some of the technologies through the back-engineering of these UFO technologies to reproduce some of the characteristics of the typical extraterrestrial vehicle. So we've come a long way in our ability to reproduce some of these things, but still they're not nearly as sophisticated as what the extraterrestrial vehicles could be. Now, the other side of that coin, Preston, is that these things are unknowns, okay? We just don't know what they are, and we have to try to figure out what they are. Many organizations and many researchers just say they're there, and we don't know what they are or where they're from. So that's more of an objective point of view. I'm sort of someplace in between that. I know that they're unknown. I know that we don't know where they're from. But my personal opinion, Preston, is, in fact, they are terrestrial or extraterrestrial, and some of them are of terrestrial technology. So there's a very complex question that you just asked.
Right. Well, I'm personally also convinced that the vast majority of them are extraterrestrial. I think it's obviously the best theory. You know, it's not a perfect theory, but
it's true.
I think it's almost impossible to deny that that's what we're dealing with. I mean, you have everything
from
radar returns and metal fragments.
Of course, yeah.
God knows, you know, what our government is holding, or many governments, you know, in terms of the extraterrestrial technology, as you were saying. Now, my question then is, what percentage of the craft flying around do you think are our own? Or, you know, how
expensive
is
it? That's a tough one, Preston. Percentage-wise, I'm not a numbers I'm not a number cruncher that way, but when you take a look at, here's a good example. Let me use the example of the French and British government's current release. Are you aware that the French and the British government, along with the Belgian government, have released their UFO files? You're aware of that. Your listeners should be aware that the British Ministry of Defense and the French government have released approximately over 3,000 files, I think 1,600 in one and 1,500 in the other. Now, I have been tasked with the responsibility of reviewing the entire release of the British government. That's my job. I've been given the responsibility by my colleagues to go through these 1,500 documents. It's like about 2,500 pages, and it's pretty dry reading. And basically, they're just simple UFO reports or reports of things by people, police officers, regular citizens, of what they saw in the sky, you know, given weather reports and what the weather conditions were and what they saw and how it moved and this, the angle of the azimuth of these things. And after reading all of these things, my estimation of most of what these files represent, I would say a good 80% of these, as far as I'm concerned, would be explainable in a lot of ways, you know, as natural phenomenon. And the other 20% is up for grabs, whether that 20% would be terrestrial or extraterrestrial. Now, we do have situations where cars, you know, people driving in their cars see a UFO and they're driving along a highway or a small back road, and the UFO will come a little bit closer than normal, and the car will shut down, the electronics in the car will stop, the radio station will go a little funny, the car will stall. Now, whether that represents an extraterrestrial incursion because of some of the electronic fields that are associated with these objects, or whether it's something different than that. So the fact of the matter is a good 20% of these things are totally and absolutely unexplainable. Of that 20%, I would venture to say that 15%, this is just my guess now, are not of this earth. And the other five, that's another group of sightings that are up for grabs. So that's kind of a synopsis as to how I break it down in my own mind as to whether they're terrestrial in origin or unknown or of extraterrestrial origin. So you got three sources there.
Right, right. Well, what do you think of the evidence, you know, pointing to the fact that, or well, should I say fact or not, I don't know, that we possess these craft that are in government, you know, such as the Roswell crash, such as, you know, all how many crashed in New Mexico? Depending on who you talk to, it's anywhere from one to, you know, 20 or more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we know of three definite crashes in the New Mexico area of unidentified craft. We know that there are three. Now, if what you might want to do one day, and maybe have one of your producers or yourself make a note of it, you should have Tom Carey and Don Schmidt on your program. They are the authors of the just recently released book called Witness to Roswell, The Unmasking of the 60-Year-Old Cover-Up. And either Tom or Don, Tom Carey or Don Schmidt, could spend a good hour with you describing the nature of the UFO crash in Roswell, which is the most extensively researched crash site in the New Mexico desert. And they have interviewed over 600 people who were associated with that crash, doctors, you know, fire chiefs, policemen, radio announcers, regular people, people in the military, soldiers who were asked to guard tents with bodies in them. It is totally amazing, and you really should mark down to, and I can give you that information if you want, to interview Tom or Don, because it's an absolutely fascinating topic, because they just don't know, there's no one else on the planet who knows more about Roswell than Tom Carey and Don Schmidt. So that's something that you might want to do. Now, in terms of what the crash sites reveal to us and how these the wreckage pieces were commandeered and what we learned from them, my personal opinion there, Preston, is that we learned a lot from the materials that were there, because Philip J. Corso, who wrote the book The Day After Roswell, was very clear that he was given this material. And what he did, he farmed it out to different independent corporate agencies to find out how these things worked. And as a result of that, the black budgets were commandeered and assigned to develop these things. And as a result of that, much of the craft, or some of the craft that we see right now, could be, in fact, the results of those back-engineered technologies.
Right, right. Well, he's definitely not the only person to say that, too. They tried to attack Colonel Corso, but they weren't able to knock him down.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty substantial.
It truly is. Well, you know, as director of the media relations for Exopolitics in Toronto, would you say it's one of your goals or missions to start a disclosure movement? You know what I mean by disclosure, trying to get...
Of course, yeah. Well, I'm not the only one doing this. We've got... as a result of some of the really intense work of Stephen G. Bassett, who is someone else you should have on your program, we have coalesced into about 14 or 15 different international exopolitical organizations. And all of these organizations, these exopolitics organizations, along with Stephen, under the sort of the auspices of Stephen's kind of guidance, we have as our goal disclosure. That's the main reason why we're doing this. I have no personal reasons for doing it. People will write books on it. I haven't written a book. I've written many articles. But I have no other agenda other than to bring about total and full disclosure. Now, that means, disclosure means the acknowledgement by government that we are, in fact, being visited by extraterrestrial races, and that the UFO phenomenon is real. That's what disclosure really means, and I think your audience and your listeners need to understand that. When the government comes to grips with the fact that it has to come clean on this and brings about disclosure or brings about the information in an open public forum, in the public arena of information, that's when disclosure will occur, and that's the goal of Exopolitics Toronto, as is the goal of the Paradigm Research Group directed by Stephen G. Bassett and all of the other exopolitical organizations around the planet. So that's our goal. We want to get government and media to accept the fact that the research is real, the phenomenon is real, and the global implications, the public policy implications of this are absolutely phenomenal and outlandishly important to us. And the big thing, Preston, is the energy issue. If you want to spend a few minutes talking about what the exopolitical movement is trying to do in terms of relating the energy issue to the current oil crisis, we can do that, because that, to me, is probably the primary reason why the environmental aspects of this are so very important as associated with the UFO issue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about that. But first, let me just give an announcement, everyone. You're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Victor Vigiani. He is currently the Director of Media Relations for Exopolitics in Toronto, Canada. And, boy, got some very interesting information going on. So do you have a website or anything, information you'd like to give out?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Our website is ExopoliticsToronto, www.exopoliticstoronto.com. And you can go there and you can, move around a little bit and see some of the interesting stuff. But, you know, your listeners could also just type in exopolitics into their search engines, and you'll come up with any number of wonderful organizations that are dealing with this. Now, I might add, Preston, that there is a lot of inconsequential and totally irrelevant information on UFOs on the Internet, and people have to be very, very careful about that. Some of the stuff on the Internet is totally incredulous, and I would put it in the category of absolute garbage. And there's a lot of stuff out there that's irrelevant, and you have to be very, very careful. And there's only, I would say, 12 to 15, and that's a lot, that's not very many, in terms of context, good sites that are related to the UFO phenomenon. And I'm really serious about that. There's not many good, credible sites out there. So if you go to Exopolitics Toronto, we have a list of some of those sites. And also, too, if you want to go to the Paradigm Research Group under the direction of Stephen Bassett, that has probably some of the best website material that you'd ever want to look at. And it's www.paradigmresearchgroup.org, and that will get you to a lot of great information, too.
All right. Okay, very interesting. Now, this is a really important subject. I mean, this is about the UFO subject. This is about presidents, and leaders of state. And didn't recently your prime minister in Canada have something to say about releasing UFO technology to help us through what you were mentioning earlier, this energy crisis that we're having?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, well, he wasn't a prime minister. The individual you're talking about is the Right Honorable Mr. Paul Hellyer. Paul Hellyer was the Minister of National Defense in the government back in the late 60s and early 70s in the Lester B. Pearson government here in Canada. Now, he would be the Minister of Defense. That would be sort of like the Secretary of Defense in the United States.
Huge.
And it was a huge position, exactly. Now, at the time when he was the Minister of Defense, he saw reports about UFOs and gathered information about it through the Department of Defense. But he really didn't take it all that seriously back in the 60s and the 70s because it really wasn't that hot of an issue. However, Paul Hellyer and I crossed paths back in early 2005. I got to meet him and talk to him, and he came forward at a conference that myself and the director of Exopolitics Toronto, Michael J. Byrd, we put on a symposium here in the University of Toronto at Convocation Hall, and Paul Hellyer was our featured speaker at the conference, and he came forward at that time and talked about the need for governments to come forward on this issue and tell the real story that's been hidden and sequestered for about 60 years about the implications, the public policy implications, and energy implications of the UFO phenomenon. So he's been a real stalwart and advocate for us in this issue. Now, you want to talk about the energy issues for a second? Do you want to go in that direction? Because that is probably the primary reason why I'm involved in this.
Yeah, well, I think this is crucial to, I mean, look at what's happening with global warming and the price of gas
and so on. Exactly. Well, in a nutshell, let me just begin by saying that, where do I start? I guess what I would say is that these craft, whatever they are and however they manifest themselves, they display flight characteristics that are unlike anything that we have. Now, these flight characteristics, and I've witnessed this myself in near Area 51, and we can get into that a little bit later if you want. I did have an actual sighting about it just outside of Area 51. But the flight characteristics that these things exhibit demonstrates the fact that they do not rely on standard, regular, ordinary propulsion systems that we have, that being, you know, chemical or nuclear or even, you know, fossil fuel propulsion. These craft do not rely on that kind of propulsion system. They rely on the energy that's in the quantum vacuum of space. And that means that it's a totally different type of propulsion system. And that type of energy that's gathered, that they gather from the quantum vacuum of space, because there is energy in every square centimeter of space. People think that space is just an empty void. In fact, it's not. The quantum vacuum of space is just replete with energy. And somehow, in some way, these UFO craft can garner this propulsion and put it together so that they can travel at or beyond the speed of light. And that's a mouthful. They can travel in a split second the number of kilometers or miles that it would take, light to travel. And light travels at 186,000 miles per second. So we cannot really fathom the fact that a vehicle of any kind of content or mass could travel at or beyond the speed of light, because our physics says that that's not possible. But what happens is that these vehicles have been tracked at speeds within our own atmosphere of over 11,000 miles an hour in our own atmosphere. And any craft that could travel that fast in our atmosphere would burn up through the friction of air. So, you know, we can see these things have a propulsion system, and they can tap into an energy system that's far beyond anything that we have. So what does that mean for our current oil crisis and our energy crisis that we're experiencing? If we can find out or come in contact with whoever these extraterrestrial beings are, we can tap into that energy system. And let me tell you that this energy system is free. It does not cost anything. It's in the vacuum of space. It's not like you go and you dig for it someplace and you burn it. This energy is free, and it's abundant, and it can be used in any type or way that we can appreciate here on the planet. Let me give you an example. If these energy sources could be tapped into in the way that we think they can, any individual homeowner on this planet could have a small device in their backyard or in their basement the size of a bread box that could power their house, take them off the electric grid, and could power their house for up to 15 or 20 years virtually free. Now, that sounds like an absolutely astounding statement, but the quantum vacuum of space provides the fact that we can tap into this energy, and it is something that these UFO craft use on a regular basis as their mode of transportation. So in and of itself, the revelation of disclosure about the UFO phenomenon is concomitant with and parallel to the enlightenment that we have to garner from the fact that this energy is free and it can relieve us from the use of fossil fuels and save the environment from devastation. So that, in a nutshell, is something that we can really understand as important and very, very vital to the human experience in terms of energy and the energy crisis that we're going through.
Right. Well, I think there's a lot of obstacles to, you know, the success of this project. I think it's inevitable that it will succeed eventually. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, right now an oil economy, and our, you know, this whole military-industrial complex that has really kind of got everybody in its grip, and is apparently covering this up.
Of course.
So it's a quasi-military. We don't even really know if I'm correct, right? So, I mean, what exactly are these obstacles, and how are we planning to overcome them?
the obstacles are wide, varied, and many, Preston. As your listeners will appreciate, the oil industry You know, they are on their last legs right now. They're searching for oil. They're searching for new reservoirs. Just heard that recently that the Arctic is being tapped into, is having another 12 years of fossil fuels available to us. In Canada here, the Alberta tar sands are slated to be touted to be the most plentiful oil reserves on the planet, greater than any of the oil resources in the Middle East. All of these things are looking towards perpetuating oil, and oil is like money in the bank. These oil reserves are, in fact, oil reserves, money in the bank, bank accounts of billionaires, trillionaires, who are commandeering the, and I use that word advisedly, the control over energy on the planet. And these oil resources are like bank accounts for them, and they don't want to relinquish these bank accounts. As you can well understand, if you've got an oil reserve worth trillions of dollars, and you know that oil reserve is worth that much on a continuous basis on the open market, you are not going to be in a position of advocating any information be released about the UFO phenomenon. You will, and not in fact, not be in favor of it. You will work actively against any kind of disclosure about this information. So we have a tremendous amount of resistance and pressure from the oil industry and some of the big corporations to ridicule, denigrate, and otherwise dismiss any type of information that relates to the engagement of the human race in an extraterrestrial presence. So that's a big factor. It's a huge, huge factor.
Right. Well, they've got practically an unlimited budget as well.
And we have the money that I have in my wallet right now, which is probably about $55, to fight against all this thing. And that's the case with many of the exopolitical organizations. We have virtually zero money. The only thing we have is information. We are information rich. But we are monetarily poor.
And well, education, I think, is another really good way to overcome these obstacles. I mean, the more people that you get involved, there's going to be a movement. I mean, this is what happened with the civil rights movement.
Of course.
Speaking. Mm-hmm. So what do you think of the future of this project? I mean, of this fall of exopolitics relations?
Yeah. Well, what we have to look at, I guess, in that respect, Preston, is the way the media is picking up on this. Programs like yourself, you know, like yours, and up here in Canada, we have several newspapers and media organizations who are gradually picking up on this and taking it up as an issue. And I think the triangle of government, media, and our resource materials, if you look at that as a triangle of communication, once the media picks up on the tremendous pressure that we are placing on them to come forward and investigate this information, I think once the media gets a hold of this, we just may very well be in a situation where the media busts this whole thing right open. Much like Watergate, I don't know if you or your listeners are old enough to remember the Watergate situation and the hearings back when Nixon was almost impeached, but he had to resign. But when the Watergate Commission had the hearings over television, over months of periods of time, it caused the crash of the United States presidency, and it was a global thing. It just had tremendous impact throughout the whole planet. My view is that this is, once the media picks up on it, will be a cosmic Watergate, and there will be hearings on this. The media will pick up on it and ask government, you have to come forward with your information. You've got literally millions of pages of classified documents relating to this issue. Let them come forward. Let the public find out about it. Let us investigate it so we can come forward and say to the public that this issue has been, first of all, sequestered by the government for over 60 years, and now it's time for its release. So I think in answering the question, we have to look at the media for an eventual resolution and where the future is going to be for this, because the pressure that we're putting on the media to come forward and to the government is really extreme. And there are several instances that we could talk about if you want over the next few minutes where I think the government and media is beginning to capitulate and understand there's a whole lot more to this than just sort of funny lights in the sky.
Right. Well, I agree. I mean, like Larry King is regularly featuring this subject, and the news still kind of derides it and jokes a little bit about it. But yeah, so what are your examples?
What, once again, sorry, what am I?
What were the examples you wanted to share?
Just recently, actually, as of today, I don't know if your listeners are aware of it, one of the examples is Dr. Edgar Mitchell, former astronaut. I don't know, once again, if your listeners remember Dr. Edgar Mitchell. He was one of the astronauts who walked on the moon. Actually, he holds the record for the longest walk on the moon of any of the of any of the astronauts. He has come forward on a British radio station, and he was interviewed, and he has confirmed that he has been involved in briefings with NASA and with on committees that he was involved in, high-level committees, and he has been sort of committed to stating that, first of all, the UFO phenomenon is real and that they are, in fact, extraterrestrial. Now, this has just been released, and I've just released this on a media release here in Canada, and it's been covered far and wide. Fox News has just picked it up, and they've got it on their internet news releases. So Edgar Mitchell is one of the astronauts, in addition to Gordon Cooper, who was an astronaut, and also Brian O'Leary, who was an astronaut. Those three astronauts have come forward with information stating that they have information that this whole UFO phenomenon is, in fact, real. So the media is picking up on it, and I think it's just a matter of time whereby some of these very credible individuals will be stated in the media, in the mainstream media, and they'll just have to pick up on it because, you can't have these many people come forward on a consistent basis and just be ignored by the media. Somewhere, these people are going to have to become front and center in the media and listened to in a very very circumspect way. So that's one example of how things are coming forward.
Well, it's about time. It certainly has been growing in momentum, I think. So do you think that it's on the horizon? This is, of course, pure speculation. But, what do you think about disclosure actually happening? Do you think it might actually happen soon?
Official
capacity,
Yeah, let's put it this way. I think, Preston, the pressure is mounting. I guess another good example of what you're saying is that we've just kind of got some information that there's been a UFO researcher who has just recently posted some information about the Stephenville lights. I don't know if your listeners are aware of that. The Stephenville lights were something.
Right.
Yeah, the Stephenville lights were it was an occurrence in the early part of this year in January, where a huge craft was tracked over the Stephenville area. It was picked up on the by FAA radar, and this thing was tracked by this radar system. We all know what the FAA is, the Federal Aviation Authority. It's responsible for tracking all flights, everything that's in the air. And they released to MUFON, the Mutual UFO Organization in the United States, they released their entire set of data on this. And they found out that they released 2.8 million bits of data on the tracking of this UFO. Now, this UFO was over Stephenville, Texas, and then eventually, in its movements, began to move towards Crawford, Texas, the location of the Bush Ranch. The President of the United States, he owns a ranch there, and it's also known as the Western White House. Yeah, and it came within 10 miles of the Bush Ranch. And this craft did not have a transponder, and it was huge. Some people say it was up to 500 yards in length, and it was tracked that way. So we're left with the assertion that the FAA tracked this thing. And when the media chooses to pick up on it, when it does, this will be something that is literally indisputable. The FAA, when it picks up a radar return, everyone depends on it. You know, if you're flying in an aircraft going from Missouri to Kentucky, you depend on the FAA to have good flight data in terms of radar returns.
Right, right. But before that data actually came out, the Air Force was waffling. They said that they weren't in the area, and then they said they were, and it was military jets. They were harassing witnesses.
Exactly. Oh, for sure. Yeah,
it's,
that's a conundrum.
It's still going on.
The FAA said we've got these, you know, these millions of data returns, but any military installation in the area said we don't have anything. So, I mean, somebody's lying, and I use that word advisedly. You know, I don't want to accuse anyone of lying, but someone's not telling the truth. Why would the FAA give to MUFON 2.8 million bits of radar data tracking these things, and then on top of that, is the public expected to swallow the fact that no military installation in that area picked up anything? And that's as a result of the Freedom of Information requests that were made by Glenn Schultz and Robert Powell, who assembled the report. So we're left with the fact that our military did not know about any of this? What does that say about the United States military? That's absolutely astounding.
It's absurd. I mean, clearly they know.
Yeah.
And this sighting now has become one of Texas's all-time biggest cases. And these
absolutely,
kind of cases that
are
turning up in state. I mean, there was one in O'Hara Airport not too long ago.
In Chicago,
Illinois, a bunch of police officers chased a UFO. There was, of course, the Phoenix lights. This is going on all over the place. But before I get too sidetracked, I want to hear about your own sighting at Area 51.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that was really that was really interesting. My wife and I, in 1996, I decided to go on a bit of a research tour of New Mexico, Nevada, and Arizona. And just to make a long story short, we landed up at the beginning of our tour, driving north of Las Vegas to through the desert onto Highway 375, which is known colloquially as the extraterrestrial highway. And we camped out in the desert on the first three nights. And we didn't really see anything. We saw planes going back and forth and, nothing really exotic. Everything pretty prosaic. We went, and then from there we left. We drove back. We drove through Nevada and Arizona and New Mexico. And then came back. And during our last three days, we camped out again near Area 51. We saw Groom Lake Road and watched the bus drive in and out on the. But at night, one of the nights that we were approaching the Groom Lake Road, we were driving along Highway 375. My wife said, "Stop the car." So I said, "Fine, stop." I pulled over, and we got out of the car and we looked to the northwest. Actually, yes, northwest. And over the mountains is a huge mountain range, just to our right. And up in the sky, there's, you know, it's about 8:30 in the evening, just about almost dark. But we saw this huge white light. Now, by huge, I mean, you know, if you hold your hand out and have a dime between your forefinger and your thumb, a dime, and it was that bright, it was that big and that white, and it was not moving. It was not like any of the stars. The stars were just in the background, and it was not an aircraft of any kind. We know that. But this light began to become diffused or diaphanous, like a snowflake. You can almost see through it. And then it began to spin. This light began to kind of rotate very, very quickly. And as it rotated, it became a little bit larger and a little bit brighter. But then suddenly it turned into, the white diaphanous look disappeared, but it turned into three separate smaller lights that were orange in a triangular formation. So if you get a picture, you know, the same sort of thing out at arm's length, but a triangular shape, like a dot at the top, orange, a dot to the left, and a dot to the right in a triangle formation as three orange lights. And then that thing began to spin. It began to spin faster and faster and faster, became a white, intense light, and then, Preston, it just literally shot off, sort of like a shoo, just blinked out of existence, shot off to the right, and just at absolutely blinding speed, like nothing I've ever seen before. So, was that a UFO? Yes. Was it extraterrestrial? I don't know. was it man-made? Possibly. But I'll tell you something. It was, we sat there, and I've got this on audio. We did not have a videotape recorder at the time, but we have this on audio. And the audio, I keep on playing it back, and it just puts the hair on my back straight up. so that it just causes all kinds of consternation, because I can just see it in my own mind right now as being a very, very real experience. And it proves to me that there's something very strange going on. So that's my story.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, let me see, what was the question I have? I thought I wrote it down, but I didn't. Well, let me see, we're almost out of time, actually.
Actually, yeah, we're getting towards the end, and it's been a great discussion. Anything else you want to talk about? I'm free and open to talk about anything that you wish.
Well, yeah, like, what do you think of the work of Stephen Greer? And he's done a lot of this type of disclosure stuff as well.
Yeah, Stephen and I have done a lot of work together. Actually, Stephen came up to Toronto, and we had a very well-attended press conference up here in Toronto. We had about 280 people at our press conference, and Stephen Greer, along with the Right Honorable Paul Hellyer, presented some information to the Canadian press and to people who were invited. And Stephen Greer has done something very, very unique, and your listeners would be appreciative of this. He has assembled in 2001 about 14 to 15 witnesses, and they are among about 400 witnesses that he has. But he brought together about 14 or 15 of these witnesses at the National Press Club in Washington, and they give testimony. Each one of them came to the microphone at the National Press Conference and stated that they would be willing to testify under oath before any congressional group, congressional hearing, be it Senate or congressional, as to the veracity of what they have been involved in. And these are military people. These are pilots. These are corporate witnesses who are willing to come forward and state unequivocally that their experiences tell a story that states the fact that the UFO phenomenon, A, is real, and that it is, in fact, of extraterrestrial origin. So Stephen Greer has done a lot of great work in, first of all, bringing these witnesses forward, and then again, on top of that, pointed to all of the alternate energy facilities that are available to us. So he's into both. He's into witnesses, providing information about that, and also into explaining what the alternative energy sources are for humanity, and literally eliminating the use of fossil fuels. And I think that's probably one of the key issues in this whole thing. Eliminating fossil fuels can save the planet, and it can also change our economy to a non-war-based economy, where we can get back to some sort of protection of the environment and protection of the planet.
Right. Well, that brings me to the question I remembered that I wanted to ask was as far as military reaction to this whole exopolitics movement. Has there been any harassment by the military or, you know, governmental or quasi-governmental forces?
Well, yeah, we've had one situation just recently of an individual researcher. This is very interesting, and I'm just about to put out a press release on this. And what the information is in terms of harassment, that's a very good question that you ask. What has happened is that a researcher in this whole area has put out a story about the Stephenville lights. Okay?
Right.
Now, what he did was he published on his internet site maps and the information about the Stephenville sighting. And he had it up there, and he put out an article on the internet, and everything was just fine and dandy. And what happened was he got a correspondence from a Secret Service agency in the United States to take the information off his website.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And this is direct. This has just come out today. I've just received correspondence from two individuals and two websites that this, in fact, has happened. So he was told by the United States Secret Service to take this information off their website, off his website. And basically the information was just, a description of the Stephenville lights and the maps that were showing the craft moving from Stephenville on a southeast trajectory, vectoring towards the Crawford Ranch, the ranch owned by the President of the United States. They call it the Western White House. and this craft was moving from Stephenville towards Crawford, Texas.
I wonder if there's a message there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, isn't that filled with intrigue? I'll tell you. So this individual researcher was told to remove this from his site. Now, my information is that this person did remove it from his website. Personally speaking, I wouldn't have done it, but I guess I'm a Canadian, and I have the safety of not being within the borders of the control of Secret Service agencies within the United States. But I guess if he did not do it, his website may have been shut down, and as a result, he may not be able to do anything in this regard. But the fact of the matter is, this individual was told to take this off his site. Now, I can give you some information about where your listeners can go to find out more about it, and you can read that at where are we here? www.ufocasebook.com, and just from there, just Google MUFON Stephenville Report, so you can find that out at the ufocasebook.com website, and they have pretty good coverage of that. So this is yet to be promulgated over the media, and it's a very interesting fact that someone has now been taken to task by an intelligence agency within the United States to stop talking about this information. I think they call that, up here in Canada, censorship. Just
yeah,
a guess, though.
It's a violation of the Constitution as far as I'm concerned. And
you bet. So it's a fascinating report, and I can send you that email and the actual release that I have just about ready to go out now.
Wow. So now you know the Stephenville situation is definitely still hot. It's going to die down probably eventually, but soon right after it there's going to be another major event. And so
it just seems to cascade. Yeah, for sure.
It's nice that we're getting some disclosure on current events, but I think part of the reason for the cover-up is this whole backlog of 50 years of cover-up that, and they've kind of painted themselves a bit into a corner, because I mean, someone's responsible for all the laws that have been broken. So do you think that's one of the reasons for the cover-up?
That the laws are being broken?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that our government and other governments are withholding information, including the actual alien bodies and technology,
of course,
and are harassing witnesses, and there's the whole Men in Black phenomenon, which is partially not just aliens, but a government official coming in and stealing people's evidence, their photographs, or what have you.
Yeah, of course. I think there's some legal implications here, and you use the word it's against the United States Constitution. If the government, and here's something that I think your listeners should really ponder, and any journalists that are listening, and also too any people in the intelligence community who are in fact listening, I think they have to look at the fact that there are legal implications for the United States government in the fact that they have contravened the United States Constitution. In a legal sense, they're withholding information that is crucial to the American public. And they've been keeping this stuff secret. They've been lying about the fact that they do not have the information, which is an abject lie. They do, in fact, have literally millions of documents relating to this issue. So you're in a situation in the United States and some of the other Western governments where the government has, in fact, been lying to their own public. So what do you do with that? What do you do with in the case where a democracy is in place, or a supposed democracy is in place, however, it's lying to its people about a fact that is truly self-evident, that these craft are of unknown origin, they have documented evidence of their origin and of their manifestation, but yet they're saying that this stuff does not exist, and they've lied about it for 60 years. That has tremendous implications for our democracy, Preston. And I'm talking about. It's seditious. It's absolutely seditious information. And here in Canada, we're complicit. I know the Canadian government is definitely complicit in this activity. They've gone along with keeping their mouths shut because the United States government has told a lot of governments, just keep quiet. Don't even admit there's anything about this. We know that for a fact. So, but then again, on top of all of that, this information is gradually seeping out. I mean, the amount of disclosure that's going on right now, or the coverage of this issue, is unprecedented. As we go along today, any number of organizations within the media are beginning to cover this information in a way that's never been covered before. So we're looking at disclosure as an evolving process, and that it will, in fact, hit the front pages very, very soon. When? I don't know. I wish I could say it would be tomorrow, but it won't be. It won't be tomorrow. But with pressure from people, from pressure from your listeners to ask their members of Congress the right questions, what is your position on the United States government covering up and sequestering information about UFOs for the last 60 years? Ask your members of Congress and ask your members of the Senate that question. I exhort every single American who's listening to me right now to ask that question, because it's definitely a pertinent question, and the answers need to come forward.
Right. Well, that sounds like a good way to end the show. I mean, there is a cover-up, but thank God it's leaking like a sieve, and I think it's going
to
end
like a sieve is a good way to put it, for sure, yes.
It's a house of cards about to collapse.
You betcha.
All right, well, Victor, thank you so much for coming on to the show. You were a great guest, had a lot of very interesting information to share. I want to just thank you so much.
Well, you're most welcome, Preston. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I'm just hoping that everyone who's listening can really take up this issue and look at it and take it seriously, especially those agencies who are listening to us in the dark black budget area. And I know they're listening, Preston, and I need to congratulate you for your courage in bringing this issue forward on the Internet the way you're doing, because this is exactly what we need to do. We need to stand up and fight for the fact that our government owes us an explanation, and we need to work with our government. We don't want to create a confrontational situation here. We want to work with our government to come forward and tell us the truth about what's really going on, and I think that's the whole truth of the matter.
Well, you want to give out your website one last time?
Yeah, one last time, the ExoPolitics website, www.exopoliticstoronto.com. And for anyone of your listeners who want to email me directly, my email address is zland@simpatico.ca.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Victor. It was great talking with you, and I'm right there with you trying to get this all this information disclosed. So thanks.
Okay.
Thanks
well,
again.
Let's hope we can do it again, President. Take care and God bless.
Definitely. All right, everyone, that's our show. You've been listening to UFOs and Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight has been Victor Vigiani, and we've been talking about exopolitics. He's currently the Director of Media Relations. So check out his website. I'm sure you'll find it very interesting. Until then, thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the show as much as I have, and I hope you can join us next week when I bring on another exciting guest to talk about UFOs and the paranormal. Till then, have a great evening and a wonderful week.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.